All right, now that I've got the correct buttons pushed, the Shilling Show resumes. Welcoming to the program, David Murata, the president of Murata Wealth Management, a longtime guest on this program. He's online at muratahonmoney.com. And today I would say grab your wallets, but that won't do any good because there's money about to be forcibly extracted from them. David Murata, welcome back to the Shilling Show. Always good to have you with us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
And let me press the right button, and you're very welcome, and we're really glad that you could be here today. All right, so we had something called the Tax Cuts and Job Act, and most of these acts, I can't stand them. This one actually had some good things in it on balance. So tell us about how it happened and what it does or has been doing for the past couple of years.
The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is sometimes called the Trump tax cut. He put it in place in his first year within office, and it reduced taxes really across the board. And in order for it to pass the Senate and the budgeting requirements that they had, it had to have a zero effect on long-term taxes. So they have it sunset after so many years. And I think it was planned that it would go through his second term, which didn't happen. And so now it's planned that it will sunset at the end of 2025, and it will have a new tax regime in 2026. It's actually not a new tax regime. It reverts back to the old taxes. And a lot of people saved a ton of money on their taxes by having this Tax Cuts and Jobs Act in place. And the taxes are going up at the end of 2025. And that's just going to cost a lot more in taxes. So your taxes are low for the next 3 years, the rest of 2023.
Relatively speaking.
Yeah, relatively. Yeah. It's one of the lower taxes regimes that we've had in place, 2023, 2024, and 2025. And then at the end of 2025, in 2026, someone who earns $94,000 will pay more tax than someone this year earning $383,000.
Wow.
That's a huge gap in the tax code that is going to be filled between $94,000 and $383,000. And you only have three more years to take advantage of the Trump tax cuts, which means you have 3 years to do Roth conversions, actually, is the primary recommendation of that. Because you get to decide when you want to increase your taxes.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get to decide when you want to decrease your taxes. The way that the tax regime works is you're postponing all of these taxes by filling up your traditional IRA account. And then later on, you find out that was a terrible mistake, and now I'm getting taxed more money than I got a tax deduction when I put the money in. That's the long-term planning that we try to do at Murata Wealth Management. We have a tax team of four people who are just working round the clock trying to do tax analysis for people. And one tax analysis takes about 2 weeks to do a single client, because what we're trying to do is we're trying to make sure that our qualified clients get a tax analysis every year. And it's doing their taxes in mock every year till age 100. And that shows interesting changes in the tax code. I've learned a ton from it. My tax analysis before then was a back of the napkin calculation, and I was right about 40% of the time. I'm very proud of being right 40% of the time, because 40% of the time is pretty good if you're doing a back of the napkin calculation. What we found is there's all kinds of strange oddities, and now I found my estimation is both a lot better, but also I'm not surprised by some of the tax analysis that we do anymore. Just the question, should I try to fish for ACA subsidies this year, or should I do big Roth conversions this year? That's a trade-off, and there's a correct answer for that. If I wait to delay my Social Security, and I also wait to do any Roth conversions, that means more of my Social Security gets taxed in retirement. And if more of my Social Security gets taxed, I could be in the 43% tax bracket with a very low income simply because it's pushing more of my Social Security to get taxed. So in addition to being loopholes in the tax code, there are also what CPAs would call tax torpedoes, where you're just getting sunk simply because you obeyed what's a normal progression, and now your IRA required minimum distributions are causing you to get your Social Security get taxed, or get a Medicare surcharge, or any of the other crazy ways the government has of taxing us in addition to the tax code tax brackets.
You know, David, every time we have this conversation, I get mad. And something you said really ticked me off, not against you, but just the fact that you have to have four people working around the clock to figure this stuff out. and how much better it would be for us if we just had a simple, straightforward system. I don't even know if that's calculable, but it seems to me the amount of productivity that would be regained and the amount of money that would be recaptured by going to something that was basically a checkbox system and would be so beneficial to the economy. Do we even have a way to figure that out?
It is amazing how much effort is put into the tax code, from CPAs to financial planners to planning to all this kind of stuff. And it really all, unfortunately, came about because of the, I think it's the 14th Amendment that Congress gets to tax our wages.
It's the 16th Amendment.
16th Amendment.
Yes.
Sorry. Congress gets to tax our wages. And if Congress couldn't tax our wages, they'd have to raise that revenue some other way. And any other way would be preferable. The best I've ever seen is what Europe has gone to, and that is a value-added tax, where I tax the product that I produce, and I get to deduct all the taxes I've paid on the materials to buy it. And that's a value-added tax. With a value-added tax, none of our income would matter to the federal government. I mean, it would also do away with all Roths if we ever got there. But that's a price I would gladly pay to have a simplified tax code where we just tax consumption. And taxing consumption, that's something you'd like to be low. You don't want savings to be low, and that's what they're taxing now. You don't want revenue or income to be low. You want those to be high. And so you should just tax the things you want to be low. My dad was always with his tongue in his cheek, and he said the best way to eliminate poverty would be just to tax it. Because if you tax poverty, poor people couldn't afford to be poor. They'd go out and earn some money. So now that's sort of the approach. Taxing consumption is the best way of doing that. Simply tax consumption with no exemptions. Tax everything that's produced, and that would be one way to have a flat tax.
I think the other thing that people miss, and again on this subject, is the impact of lower taxes versus higher taxes. And I look at this on the local level. And so you have the decision makers, who in this case are all Democrats, and they say, well, we're going to raise the meals tax, we're going to raise the hotel tax, and that's just putting the burden on people who are traveling. What they don't tell you is when the government takes that money, that's money that any travelers, and I'll put that in air quotes because the rest of us pay it too, any travelers cannot spend in this community. That's money that's taken out of the economy and put into this worthless government that's just going to squander it. But again, people don't see that, and they get tricked by these illusions and the deceptions of local governing officials.
I went and I was reading some clickbait on how all these mostly Hollywood entertainers had gotten into money troubles, or an athlete has gotten into money troubles. And I was amazed at the number of times it was simply they failed to set aside enough money to pay their taxes. and they got into tax trouble. And I thought to myself, you know, if we had a consumption tax, you can't get into tax trouble, because if you spend
the
money, you pay the tax as you go. But these people, you know, they thought they were making a lot of money, or even the Beatles were facing Great Britain's 95% tax rate, and they even wrote a song about it, The Tax Man. Right. And so all of this stuff is just to say the more money you make, the more you pay. And if you think about a Hollywood actor, one year they get millions of dollars for some film. They're in the highest tax bracket. The next 2 years, they may not work, and they may not get anything at all. And yet we have this great progressive tax system, and it's like having a big red hot iron at some income, and then no one wants to go to that income. Well, if you think about it, Roth conversions are one way that you can help smooth out your income a little bit, or at least preload that in the paying the tax up front and get it into Roth. If you can get most of your money into Roth, you can be in the 10% tax bracket and have incredible wealth. We have clients who have finished their Roth conversions now after many years, and they have millions of dollars in a Roth, and they are in the 10% tax bracket.
That is remarkable. We're talking with David Murata, 977-1070, steep tax increases ahead. We come back on the other side. We're going to talk about the death tax, the estate tax, one of the most egregious taxes that we have. If you have comments or questions, we'd love to hear from you. Line open at 977-1070. Shilling Show back in a moment. All right, into the final segment of the Shilling Show for today with our friend David Murata, muratamoney.com. Steep tax increases ahead. Now let's talk about this horrible tax. I remember being a kid learning about this tax and going, how dare they? How dare they tax you on your death? and take money away from you, from your family and your posterity. So let's talk about the estate tax and where it is now and where it's going.
Currently, the estate tax exemption, so the amount of estate tax which is not saddled on you when you die, is currently at $12.9 million, which is a large number, I realize. You know, most people don't have $12.9 million. That's how estate taxes go.
Right.
But small business owners do.
And it's not always that they're sitting on $12 million and almost never sitting on that in cash. This is wrapped up in the business value and equipment. And,
or the farm.
Or the
or
farm,
whatever.
Right.
Right.
That's right.
And you know, you read about the taxes these days and they say only, I'm putting that only in quotes, only over 300 farms every year is subject to this tax. And they think, you know, they're very proud of this because it's like there's only 300 farms that get subject to this tax, you know, family farms. Mm-hmm. This is family farms. But I remember hearing a story where they had prepared for this inheritance with their family, and grandfather died, and they were able to pay the tax. And then a few years later, Papa died, and then they couldn't pay the tax.
They got hit again.
Yeah, they got hit again just a couple of years later. They were intending to begin building the money back up to pay this tax. You know, and then poor son, he's not only lost his father, now he loses the farm because he's got to sell off a big portion of his land just to pay the tax. If you think about it, big agriculture doesn't have to pay this tax because they don't have someone who dies and then ruins the farm. And so it's just benefiting one set of people rather than benefiting another set of people. And if I think people would prefer having family farms be able to...
Well, this
is
the rhetoric that we hear all the time out of the federal government, elected officials, and so forth, that we want to protect the small businesses, the families, and so forth, and how evil the big corporations are. And yet, it sounds like this policy and others are doing exactly the opposite.
Yes. Yeah, so take, for example, a $13 million farm, barely hit with any estate tax today. Mm-hmm. In 3 years, they would owe an estate tax of $2.5 million. Because the estate exemption is being cut in half, it could always go down even lower than that. And when they talk about, if you look at the estate tax only affects less than 1% of revenue in the government. Mm. So it's not a lot of revenue. They can get their revenue from other places, but they like it because it's a tax on rich people. And when you say rich people, those are family farm owners. I mean, that's who you're going to get hit with, or family business owners or things like that. It's not a fair tax. The tax rate for the estate tax should be zero. Capital gains should be zero.
Yes.
But instead, they have these sometimes exempted limits. Most capital gains is avoided, but it's avoided by some very twister rules simply to try to avoid it. So if I have money that's in a stock or in an ETF or in a mutual fund that's highly appreciated, I just hold on to it till I die. You know, if I wanted to sell it, I would sell it today if it's in a Roth IRA or an IRA. Mm-hmm. If it's in a taxable account, we have some incredible mathematics we have to go through just to figure out if it goes over some hurdle table where we can get a better return in something else than we think we could get in the current thing. It locks capital in place. I remember I was looking at properties, and there was one property that was owned by a 94-year-old woman, and she didn't want to sell it. I don't know why it was listed, because she wanted to get rid of it, but she couldn't sell it because then her heirs would have to pay this massive capital gains tax, and if they just waited until she died, then they wouldn't have to pay this capital
the value
gains
steps up.
Tax. Yeah, because you get a step up in cost basis. You know, and so the Democrats' solution to this is to not get a step up in cost basis and let's just gouge everyone. Again, most of the capital gains is just inflation. Mm-hmm. And there is a rate of inflation such that paying the capital gains tax means y'all have lost after tax money, after inflation money. So y'all pay the tax on the inflated value, and then you'll have less capital than you started with, simply because inflation is so high. Last year, it was so high, it was almost there. And fortunately, it's less today. But paying the capital gains tax on inflation is just cruel.
So we've got just a little over a minute left to kind of wrap all of this up. We're dealing with tax uncertainty, and there are certainly legislative options. We don't know what's going to happen. So how do we proceed in an environment of uncertainty?
I think the best planning is to assume that Congress will do nothing. Mm-hmm. Congress has proven itself very good at doing nothing. And so that's probably the best option. And if it does nothing in 3 years, we're going to have the standard deduction get reduced. AMT will come back. Phase outs will come back. It will get a lot more complex. I would, and that's what we're recommending to our clients, is simply take advantage of the next 3 years to do as large Roth conversions as you can. And there's an optimum Roth conversion. If you do too much Roth conversion, you might push yourself into higher tax brackets. Mm. On the other hand, if you have a large taxable account, pushing yourself into a higher tax bracket could very well be worth it simply because you get to pay the tax early and that reduces your taxable account. Unfortunately, because of capital gains, dividends, interest being taxed onto a taxable account, taxable accounts are growing at a rate that is 1.5 to 2% less than normal growth because you have to pay the tax every year. And so it's like having a 1.5 to 2% drag on that portfolio.
He's online at maradaonmoney.com. David Marotta, a depressing conversation, but an important one nonetheless. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.